Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for August 23rd, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the U.S. Open. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. It's the U.S. Open, Nima. What else do we want?
It's a final major of the year. New York City right now is raining outside of my hotel room, but I think it's going to be okay as the day moves forward. Super hot yesterday, as you know, Parsa, but I think it's going to be, what, in the 70s, right, for the next week or so, which bodes really well for the players as an overall. I don't think you're going to see a lot of retirements like we did last year when it was like crazy in the hundreds with the humidity.
Yeah, and the spectators as well, you know.
Absolutely, yes. As an overall, it's a win-win for everybody. So I'm really looking forward to that aspect of it. It was almost like a couple of years ago. I remember, I think 2017. It was very cool. I was wearing t-shirts, and I had to bring a sweater because I had to go buy a sweater, I remember. So it was, that's the way it was. But anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, I think nighttime, you're going to need it.
Yeah, I think here. This year, for sure. But listen, I mean, you know what? It's here, and draws are looking good. And I think there's going to be a lot of good first-round matches this year that we're going to get into. As well as some compelling storylines that definitely we need to address. So we're going to start with the women's side. And on the women's side, obviously, we have Osaka, who is bidding to win her third major as well as defend this title. She sustained an injury in Cincinnati, which is a little bit still unknown. We don't know what the extent of that is. She's been posting a lot on Instagram. Hasn't really been practicing too much. I haven't seen too many practicing pics, so that's a little bit worrisome for me, but I still got to go with the notion that she's ready to go. Otherwise, I mean, I'm not sure what she's doing here, but except for, like, you know, the press and media stuff that she has to do. But there is definitely, you know, some matches that we're going to have to get into. I want to talk about a player who's actually Canadian. I'm not sure how many people in the States are really going to care too much, but in the sense of as an overall tennis story, Bianca Andreescu comes in to this event. I mean, winning the Rogers Cup, albeit a retirement victory over Serena, but that was still very well deserved. But she's coming in as the 15th seed. Do you see her right now, if she's fit, does she have a viable opportunity of winning this tournament? What do you think?
It's a little early, to be honest with you. She's done a tremendous job in certain events, of grinding through the week. For some reason, over 2 weeks, even though it's still best of three and you have more rest, I feel like it's a little bit more of a challenge. It's a little bit more of a headache, more distractions to deal with, things that have to be done over a 2 week time frame. I think more things can go wrong. It's almost easier if you know the same routine day in and day out. You have to go, warm up and go play a match, and then you go eat dinner, go to sleep, stretch, whatever. You wake up the next day, warm up, go play a match. And in New York, and in any Grand Slam, it's different. You've got time in between. There's more chances of having an off day. There's more chances of building soreness. The emotions are higher. The intensity is greater. So I don't know if she's quite there yet. She certainly has the game to win a slam. So it's a matter of her having the maturity, the discipline, and the experience, which is what I think is a little bit lacking, in order to win a slam.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I think she's one of the hot players right now. And that always, can bode well for New York. You could also flame out early. But to me, her draw looks pretty good, right? She's got a wild card, American wild card to start. And then you said Serenko, who made the semis, I believe, last year. She's lurking. And then you have, Wozniacki, who I really don't think is in great form. this year, particularly. You have Kvitova potentially later on. I mean, I just don't really see too many. And then you got Halep, who could be a problem. Simona Halep, who's playing well, you know, just won Wimbledon, has again sustained some injuries. Maybe she's the player to look for because she looks like she's rounding into form nicely. She's got it. Looks like a pretty easy, I think, cakewalk at least until, you know, the fourth round. She's got maybe Strykova. I mean, there's nothing really happening around her. But I think Andreescu, if she's, you know, she proved Parsa, especially at the Rogers Cup. She played, you know, albeit, like I said, she didn't play, she didn't really have to do anything against Serena, but she has some really tough matches, and those are back-to-back-to-back days, right? At this tournament, you get a day off. And that, you know, even though she's only 18, 19, that's going to make a world of difference for her recovery in the event that she's a little bit sore, right? But every tournament is a new tournament, and that's we know that all too well. So we'll see how that unfolds for her. But
it's funny, Nima, with a young person, I feel like that's almost not good. You know, you have too much time to think. That's what I mean by the spacing. I don't know how good that is.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, which is not something a lot of people talk about, because generally speaking, for like a Serena or a Federer, that's, you know, that's a necessity. But when you look at it, somebody like maybe Felix or Andreescu, maybe they just want to keep playing, right? Because their bodies just heal up nice and quick, you know, very quickly. So it's interesting. I mean, we'll see how it unfolds. But I definitely like her chances throughout this draw. So I want to talk about some highlighted first-round encounters that we need to follow. We have Sabalenka versus Azarenka. How do you see that one unfolding?
I mean, Azarenka's continuing to try and, you know, make this comeback, quote-unquote, or so to say, whatever you want. I mean, I think Sabalenka is got a little too much for Azarenka, and Azarenka hits sort of a clean ball.
Yes.
You know, it really depends. You know, because the U.S. Open, we know it could all of a sudden turn windy. I would like Azarenka in that sort of situation. But I think Sabalenka is going to win this match 7 out of 10 times right now.
I could not agree with you more. Then we're going to talk about Muguruza versus Alison Risk. You know, Risk making the, was it quarters or semis of Wimbledon? She's got that very eclectic game with the, you know, the Eastern grips and very flat, very good, very game that's conducive to a grass court. But I think on a relatively faster hard court, which actually you have said that it is not, it can work a little bit better. But Muguruza has had her own injury struggles coming in. So I think Risk might be tipped as, you know, the slight favorite in this one. What do you think?
Find her, you know, I don't know about a slight favorite. You know, who knows with Muguruza, right? Muguruza is so prime for a first-round exit in any slam she plays. She's dangerous when she gets deeper. So Risk being in form, newly married, and, you know, definitely having the best year of her career. Definitely, I would put it as even instead of one having a favorite over the other.
Okay. And then we got to talk about Sofia Kenin, who has, I believe, made semis of back-to-back tournaments in Toronto as well as Cincinnati. She's been playing some great tennis as of late. She beat two number one ranked players in both of those events. So she's ready to go. I mean, like, what do you think about her game? Is she the real deal? It looks like you're pretty high on what she's been doing lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely believe in her. I mean, she's got that championship attitude. You know, as much as her emotions boil over and she sort of slams the racket down, it's all in that pursuit of perfection. And she doesn't let it get to the next point. So she'll express her emotion and then move on. And she's so diligent and just constantly battling and fighting. And it's, you know, week in and week out, it's always another top four type performer in the tournament that takes her out. And so you definitely can expect a deep run from her. And I think as she gets older and she gets a little bit better tactically, I think there's going to be very, very much an upside for her. I think, you know, her and Andreescu are definitely looking as the, you know, the second coming of the next Grand Slam champions.
Okay, so you think she's at a position where she can win a major?
She is primed and ready to go. I think the next 3 years for her and Andreescu, I think, are going to be very telling. I do think Kenin's going to take a little bit longer just because, you know, there's more manipulation of the ball that she has to do. She still needs a little bit of a game plan B, a little bit better, and a little bit more consistency. And I think as soon as her shot selection gets a little bit more disciplined and she introduces a little bit more variety into her game, I think that there is very, very high upside for her.
Okay.
Attitude is good.
Okay. Moving on, we got Konta versus Kazakina. What do you think about that match?
Always challenging to tell. I mean, which Konta is going to show up? I remember Konta here, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, was in the qualifying. I turned to one of my students and just said, you know, this girl's terrible, you know, whatever it is. And she ended up coming back and winning that match and then qualified. And then all of a sudden she became the Konta that we knew all from that tournament. So literally the opposite of what I thought happened in that first round qualifying match, 4 years ago. Interesting stuff, you know. I really don't know. It depends on who shows up and when they show up.
And then moving forward, we have Sakari versus Camilla Giorgi. So Sakari's got that very physical, spin-oriented, footwork-friendly game, excellent shape. And then you have Camilla Giorgi, who just hits the heck out of everything, goes for broke first, second serves, you know, tries to annihilate pretty much every single ball. She's standing in her way. How do you feel about that one? Sakari, for me, as another player, I think if she can get out of her own way, can really make some strides towards the top 10, because you have an excellent athlete here who really loves the game and who really puts in all of the work that she needs to be, you know, a top-level player.
Totally agree. And as I gave you feedback on what I saw at the courts, the ball is hitting the surface and going up. And so that's always going to favor a spin player.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, you know, when we get to the men, I already texted you a few days ago. I was like, I don't even know what the draws are. But you already know who I think is going to be in the final before even the draws came out. So I think anyone who plays with a little bit more spin is going to be have a slight advantage in this U.S. Open. And I think it's going to bode well for Serena. I think it's going to bode well for the players that need a slight bit more time, and we'll see how that works out. But I think Sakari's got a good draw there.
Okay. And then we got the big one that everybody's been talking about, probably the highlighted first round match on both draws, which is Serena Williams versus Maria Sharapova. And Parsa, before we get your analysis on this, it's interesting for me because there was a Nike event a couple days ago. It was the Queens of the Future event where they had some, you know, Serena and Sharapova came, as well as, you know, some of the new players like Keys and Osaka and stuff like that. But they had like a group photo, and the group photo is Serena on line one, and then, you know, Sharapova, a couple other players, line two, then line three and line four with, like, you know, Carl Garcia and some of the other players. But it was interesting that Sharapova has always been in Serena's shadow. Let's call it what it is, right? And she's always kind of, even in her book, she alluded to how she's kind of like envious of her and she's looked up to her and all of this stuff. And with the season that Sharapova has had, with the injury woes and her suspension, and let's be honest, we're not going to dwell on it too much, but not being the same player that she was prior to, you know, taking the stuff that she was taking, right? We're not insinuating anything. I'm just saying that that's just fact. And she's had a lot of injuries since. She's always been hampered and in bad form. With where she is right now, Serena also kind of injured, right? She pulled out, she played the Rogers Cup, got through the four matches, had to withdraw against Andreescu, didn't play Cincy even though she was on site. Now she's at the US Open, ready to go, still trying to, you know, get to Margaret Court's, you know, moniker of getting to 24 majors, still is not there. Big match, I think. I mean, this is a massive match. Let's just call it, like, this is not a joke, this match, right? And even though it might not be like a 7-6 in the third, still from a TV perspective, it's huge. What do you think this kind of means for Sharapova if she could win this match? Like, fair and square in terms of, like, it finishes, actually, even if Serena's not at her top form. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would mean the world to her and totally change everything around. But Nima, you're asking for a miracle, my man.
Yeah,
she's not winning this match.
I don't think so.
So she just doesn't have the sting on her ball and doesn't move as well. So it's a double whammy. You know, Serena's only way she wins this match is if Serena's really hampered or injured or of some sort and she's compromised in some way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, Sharapova's a bad draw for Sharapova there.
I think you're going to probably see this Tuesday night match. First on at 7 o'clock. That's what I would guess if I was going to guess right now. They probably won't both want a couple more days to chill, like another extra day. I mean, I know it depends on how the draws work, but I think they would be best to put that on Tuesday and then probably followed by a good men's match. So so we got that one covered. I also want to give a shout out to Amanda Anisimova, who unfortunately lost her father a couple of days ago. She's subsequently had to withdraw from the event. I mean, young, promising star who hasn't played this summer because of injury. And then this happened to her. So, I mean, she's going through a ton. We wish her the best because, I mean, if that was not the case, no injury, and, you know, this didn't happen to her father, I mean, she's, for me, she could maybe win the tournament or at least make the semis or quarters. I mean, she's an incredible tennis player. Her future looks bright, and I hope she can get through this tragedy and move forward and do some really good things. And now, Parsa, we're looking at the draws. I'll tell you what I'm looking at. I'm looking at from the top half. I'm actually going to be going with Naomi Osaka, Bianca Andreescu, and then bottom half, I'm going Madison Keys and Serena. I'm going with Osaka Keys final with Keys winning. And before I get your take on it, Parsa, what do we think about the Coco Gauff train? Because this is a wild card player. She's on line 6. Potentially could play Osaka in round 3, which would be massive. What do you think of this match? And what do you think of that player before we get your top 4?
Yeah, I mean, Coco's definitely got a ton of upside.
Yes.
You know, just like I said after Wimbledon, I still think that she's someone who's growing. And so, you know, I want her to still reserve my judgment. I mean, she clearly has talent. She clearly has the right attitude, which is very important. And then the rest is, you know, how does her body finish up? You know, if does she get too big, or does she stay the same, or does she get thicker, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think it really is going to define how her adult career is. As of right now, she definitely can pose a ton of problems for people, but I don't consider her a threat at this moment.
Okay. And so who do you have as your final four and then your winner?
So I've got Osaka in the top half there, and then Halep going to the semis. And then I've got Svitolina and Serena Williams. And I'm going to have a Halep and Serena Williams final. And I think this is the one, Nima. I think Serena overcomes all the demons of last year. I think she finally catches Margaret Court. And, you know, there's one thing, Nima, that I have to say out loud. Not that I've always been a huge Serena fan or whatever it is, but this woman has made her living and her career on being down and out, on being this sort of underdogish, you know, battling through all different kinds of things and always being the king or queen on top.
Yes.
If that makes any sense. And so the script is there. The Broadway show is written. You know, the 30 for 30 ESPN special is there. It's all for the making, you know, with the back injury and last year's ballyhoo and then her failed attempts for I think 2 or 3 now finals. Mm-hmm. To catch Margaret Court. And I just think it's all just rolling towards this, you know, there's the expectation is low with the injuries. I don't know. I just there's some gut there that's saying, you know, if she can get through and she looks pretty solid, I think it's going to be something for the ages.
Okay. I mean, that would be cool, man. I would love to see that. Because
who do you have for your dark horse, Nima?
Great question. I have actually a player with a bit of an edge. I was going to go with Coco Gauff, but I think she might be able to make the third round. But if Osaka is good, I don't think she's beating Osaka. I'm going to be going with Danielle Collins, another American, loves these courts. She's got an edge, you know. A lot of people don't talk about that, but she really believes in herself. And I think, you know, she's got that all-American college theme. It's a good story as well, too. Again, I don't think she's going to... I mean, I don't think when people go dark horses, this also needs to be said. Doesn't matter who it is, if it's us, if it's ESPN, if it's CNN, whoever it is. I don't think Danielle Collins is going to win the tournament. I just think she can make some noise in the draw. You know what I mean? Like, I can maybe make fourth round quarters. I, like, for me to say, like, she's going to win this tournament, I don't think that's a smart, like, that's just not a viable, you know, analysis, because she's not going to win the tournament. But she definitely can make some noise and have a deep run. So I think that's who I'll be going with. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with some players to watch.
Okay.
Because I like it. You know, we didn't mention Sloane Stephens. Sloane Stephens just, they separated from Sven Grundfeld. And
she's back with her other guy, the other coach.
Yeah, and back, you know, and I think that that's going to bode well. Sometimes there's good feels, and the court's playing to her liking and to her speed. So she's definitely very dangerous. You know, I didn't pick her to go through that section, but, you know, I find her going to pose a lot of problems for Halep in the quarter there. So I've got two wild cards that people should take a look at. Francesca Di Lorenzo, who's a college player. She's so unorthodox. Came from a small town in the Midwest. And just, you know, this girl is hungry. She's just, she'll do anything. And she'll carve you up. And someone to definitely watch. I mean, she could win a couple rounds here. And I really like her demeanor and the way she goes about her business. I think those are really important things. And like I've been mentioning a lot today, it's attitude, attitude, attitude. The other one to watch is Catherine McNally. She's another U.S. wild card.
Okay.
She's definitely on the up and up. Unfortunately, she's got the winner of Serena and Sharapova, so she'll probably go down. But that could be a very tricky match for Serena Williams. McNally's got an unbelievable fighting spirit. Another Midwest girl. She's just a fighter. And, you know, so another one that is definitely going to be there, you know, maybe in a couple years from now. Definitely someone to watch. And definitely, you know, if you're at the Open and she's playing on the backcourt somewhere, it's definitely worth it to go watch her. So a little tidbit there. That's what I got for you.
And Parsel with the inside American info. With, you know, you obviously, for everybody who knows, Pars is a, you know, high-end coach in the States, and he goes to Kalamazoo, he's at all the big events, so he knows about all these up-and-coming American players. Pars, I just want to share some more insight as well, too, just on Serena quickly. I forgot, I apologize. I was at an ASICS event yesterday at the flagship store on Madison over here, and Patrick Mortoglu was there because he's become now a brand ambassador for ASICS. I guess he's going to be changing over his academy and everything for 2020 because he was with Nike previously because of the Serena connection and everything. But it looks like everybody's going to be changing over to ASICS. And she said that she's ready to go, you know, Serena. She's feeling good. And, you know, he loves the limelight too, right? He's the guy who's always wants to be front and center as well. So it's going to be interesting, definitely, for me to see how Serena does, how the up-and-coming Americans, and, you know, this is the tournament to do it. I mean, you want to make a name for yourself, you do it right here in Queens, because, you know, you're going to be good for a very, very long time. Moving now, Parsa, men's draw. Very, very interesting draw, because it's pretty top-heavy. And I want to start, Parsa, I want to start with a player who's been tearing it up this summer. Then I want to talk about three cool first-round matches to look at, and then we can get into some side things and then break down the draw quickly. So first player is Daniil Medvedev. Parsa makes the finals of City Open in Washington, D.C., loses to Nick Kyrgios, I believe 6-6, moves to Montreal week after. No time for the rest, no rest for the wicked. He loses to Rafa Nadal, 3-0 in the finals. Moves on to Cincinnati. Thinks he's tired, whatever, not even close. Makes the finals and then, you know, beats David Goffin in straight sets to win his first Masters 1000, second title of the season. I think the guy's made like six finals this year, up to number 5 in the world. This guy's got the very interesting game, Parson. I think that's what it comes down to. You got to be a little bit different nowadays, right? You can't be this baseline clone or whatever, right? The guy just comes out there. He's got that really loose arm. Doesn't look like he really cares when he hits the ball, but he's got drop shots. He's got an amazing backhand. It's just right there every time. Got that very loopy forehand that kind of we would never teach, right, Parson, where he kind of finishes over his neck. You know what I mean? Like, you never see players do that nowadays, right? Like, you know that, and players do that, they kind of choke themselves at the end of their follow-through. Nobody really does that. Everybody's kind of around the opposite shoulder, a little bit below it. But it's working like a dream for him. His serve is very good. Returns are very good. He's got good feel. He's not getting tired. And he's got some rest now because he didn't play in Winston-Salem. How about Daniel Medvedev? Is he ready to win a slam? Like, what's going on here? The guy's on fire.
I mean, he's definitely going to go deep. And he's going to give, I feel like, Djokovic a ton of problems.
Yes.
And
he beat Djokovic in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I don't think he'll beat him here. Yes. But I think it'll be a five-setter.
Yeah, that could definitely be. And I mean, but so what, let me ask, because we haven't, you know, we didn't talk to people for a couple of weeks. What do you overall like about the guy's game? What do you think it is? And does he have sustainability? You know what I mean? Like, what do you see in Daniel Medvedev's game as an example that you don't see in Sasha Zverev's game? Do you see?
Yeah, Nima, what's the word I've been using today?
You got to remind me. I'm getting old, man. You got to.
Attitude.
Yeah.
Attitude. It's this guy's got the attitude.
He does. He's kind of got that cocky demeanor. But so does Zverev, though. Zverev's pretty cocky, too.
Cocky? I don't know. I don't know if Medvedev is cocky. I look at him as sure of himself.
Yes.
Versus cocky. Cocky being like, hey, I'm the man. I'm the man.
Okay.
You know, and then, oops, I'm not the man. Where Medvedev is like, I'm sure of myself. I'm okay with myself. I have a little bit weird technique. I hit drop shots. Okay. And then he's like, deal with it. And then he goes out and proves it. Okay. You know, I think that's a little bit different than Zverev, who's like a little bit more of a hot shot. And he's, you know, the flowing hair and everything's a little bit more, you know, of a show.
With the chains and everything, yeah.
Chains and the whole thing. And, yes, and not that I'm, you know, going after someone's, you know, appearance and making a judgment. But just based on the body of work, Medvedev is willing to go toe-to-toe in big moments. He beats Djokovic in rallies, which is incredible and unheard of. At the same time, he can step up and serve big with the big guys, and he has all that variety to try to upend. And tactically, he's just getting better and better every time he plays on the big stage. And I think that this is going to be another coming, and I think next year is going to be his year, possibly, depending on what Djokovic's level is like. But I feel like still big match experience belongs to Djokovic, and I think that'll ultimately be why Djokovic will advance.
You know, Parsa, it's really interesting, you know, that you say that, because when you look at confidence, for me, there's a few things. Like, you know, we know, we'll talk about Nick Kyrgios in a bit, but, you know, he's very well known for hitting now the drop shot serves, like the underhand, but also serving 130 mile an hour second serves. And when you look at the match in Cincinnati in the semifinals where Medvedev defeated Djokovic, when you look at the match, his average second serve speed was, I believe, high 90s. And then in the second set, it got up to about 107. In the third set, Parsa, his average second serve speed, average, was 120 miles an hour. And when you look at that, I mean, okay, so you have to be pretty confident to do that, irrespective of the ability to do it. Because Taylor Fritz can hit 120 mile an hour second serves too if he wants to. It doesn't mean that they're going to go in, right? But he physically has the ability. So does Jack Sock, who's coming back from injury. So does Opelka. But that doesn't mean that they're going to do it when they need to do it, right? When they're down, when it's 3-all, love 30 against the greatest returner in the history of tennis, and you start saying, okay, I'm going to start serving 120 mile an hour second serves. What are you going to do about it? And not even Djokovic could do much about it. That to me is something. So the point that I'm trying to make is that he's doing that right now. But you know what? When there's that, you know, that smidget of doubt that enters your mind, that is all, that evaporates very, very quickly. It can happen to LeBron James, it can happen to Roger Federer, and it can certainly happen to Medvedev. So what I'm saying is, right now, this guy is on the high of the highs. He's like king of the world right now, right? And does this last through the US Open? We shall see. If it does, then I mean, listen, man, this guy's going pretty deep, because he's feeling good, and we'll see how it goes and all that. But it's going to be interesting to me to see how his confidence takes him throughout the fortnight, because a Grand Slam's a different animal. You know, five sets, a lot of different things can happen. But it's definitely an interesting proposition on deck for Daniel Medvedev. So Parsa, now let's look at some first round matches to look at that are going to be highlighted. We start off with an all Canadian affair that is a rematch of actually last year's first round between Felix OJ Aliassime, Dennis Shapovalov. Shapovalov still alive in Winston-Salem. They rained out yesterday, so they're playing, I believe, the quarters and semis today. But it's interesting, Parsa, because Felix obviously has been playing really well this year. Dennis has been a little bit on a downward spiral. Let's see if he can resurrect himself a little bit this week. But both of them have had a commonality, Parsa, where they've both been struggling with their serves. A lot of double faults. We're talking about, like, you know, in the teens. And it's something interesting for me to see if they're trying to work through that or a little bit of the yips with their serves. But how do you see this one playing out? Two Canadian boys that have been touted, obviously, as future top 10 and maybe Grand Slam champions in the future.
Shapovalov is a little bit behind. I think he hasn't been improving at the same rate that Ugar Aliassime has. And I think that's still going to be the difference. I think Aliassime has the ability to lock it down when necessary, and Shapovalov can get off, you know, the hinges can come undone, and when they do, he's got really no backup. It's either going in or going out, and you know, it requires him to be seriously in form and hot. And so the worst thing that Ugar Aliassime, you know, could happen for him is that Shapovalov goes and wins Winston-Salem and is just in terrific form. I think then it bodes problems, you know, where he's got the feel goods going on. But you know, I think short of that, I think this is Felix's match.
Okay. And then next one, very interesting one. We have Tsitsipas, who has been struggling, against Andrei Rublev, who has been playing fantastic. This to me is gonna be a crackerjack first round match. Definitely for me, Parsa, this has five sets written all over it. Rublev still alive in Winston-Salem. He defeated Roger Federer in Cincinnati. I believe he made the finals of Hamburg as well, too. I mean, this guy has been playing very well. He's just on another guy who's, again, not a guy to me that I look at as a future Grand Slam winner, but he's got a very dangerous game. I mean, he's got a slap-happy forehand that can just, you know, he can rip that shot from anywhere in the court. He's got Fernando Vicente as a coach who was pretty much only a forehand player, so he's passed on tons of wisdom on that particular shot to him, and he already had what it takes on that shot anyways. He already had a naturally gifted forehand and has just become a missile on that side. I look at this as a very dangerous match for Steph, for Tsitsipas. What do you think? Is this upset written all over it, or do you think Tsitsipas gets through this match?
Probably Tsitsipas finds a way, but I, like you said, I think it's going to be a very tricky and very difficult. You know, Tsitsipas can be a little bit more consistent over a best of five time frame. We have to see how it plays out, you know, and maybe Rublev has been doing a little too well and
that's, you know, true.
Runs into a little bit of an energy loss going into a best of five against a world-class player like that. It's a little bit different. So we'll see.
But also remember that Rublev made the quarters here a few years ago, the year that Nadal won the tournament when he had that easy draw. Nadal tuned him in the quarters, but I mean, he likes these courts. He beat Dimitrov that year, beat a couple other good players. So then we have Milos Raonic, another Canadian, versus Nicholas Jarry, who's been also coming up, the tall Chilean. This, I think, is a dangerous match for Milos as well, too. I mean, this guy, talk about injury prone and not in like major injuries like Del Potro, where you crack a kneecap or you need wrist surgery. Just niggles, you know what I mean? All over the place. Back tightens up, hamstring tightens up, knee hurts, ankle problems, back seizes up. I mean, you name it. This guy's just all... And then, I mean, I would be really surprised if he gets through Nicholas Jarry here. He has the ability to with that serve. But I just think that something is going to go wrong. And unfortunately, you're going to see Milos bow out again very early in this event.
Yeah, I mean, Milos is all pro, Nima. You know, he's a guy with a live arm and nothing else. There's nothing athletic about him.
Yes.
And so everything he's done, which is an incredible accomplishment, is all literally pure work ethic. You know that the guy's a worker. And so his body is now rebelling, you know, and it's sad to see. He still has a world-class cannon arm. And the rest of it is just... you know, he just can't get healthy. It's unfortunate, but he put in a lot of work to get to the position where he's in, and I think this is a result of that.
No question about it. Our last previewed match is Fabio Fognini versus Riley Opelka. And if you could draw up a better match from an American standpoint in the first round, I really don't think you could. This is going to be an amazing match, Barca. You're going to have Fognini, who, you know, he's capable of anything. The guy can play lights out. He plays to the crowd. He's volatile. He's got the Italian flair. And then you got this guy, Riley Opelka, who's just a skyscraper of an American player. Cannon serve. I mean, the guy's just incredible athlete. I think really good forehand, too. I love his game. I think he's got a very nice game. For a guy his size, he moves pretty well, too. And I think this, to me, is a dangerous match for Fognini. I mean, Opelka's not going to break a ton. But if he stays healthy and he stays there, I mean, this has five sets, night match, maybe on, like, Armstrong. And it's just going to be, you know, ready to go. What do you think about this one?
Problem for Opelka is, I think anywhere else, this would be a big problem for Fognini.
Yes.
But Fognini is a entertainer, and so they're going to be all out in full force. Even if he's the villain, I think he's going to be ramped up, ready to go, and very, very focused. So I think the only thing that could really harm Fognini here is that if Opelka is just serving lights out and he just can't get a look, I think then Fognini is in a lot of trouble. So it's going to come down to Opelka serve, which, in, you know, if I'm in Opelka's camp and I hear someone saying that about this matchup, I think that's what you'd want. You'd want the match to come down to Opelka's serve. And I take those odds. You know, that's his biggest and strongest shot. And so it's going to come down to his strength.
Okay. And then a quick shout out to Janko Tipsarevic, the very analytical Serb, has said that he's going to retire by the end of the year. So we wish him a great US Open, and he's been a fun guy. Obviously, he's been hampered with injuries throughout the last couple of years, but he's been playing on and off. You know, good guy. He made top 10. He's had a very good career, and he's probably going to get back to Serbia, and he's got an academy and stuff like that. So maybe, I wouldn't even be surprised if he joins Djokovic's camp at some point. You know, they're good buddies, and we'll see how it goes for him. So Parson, now getting into the draw. We got Novak Djokovic going for his 17th major. He comes in, didn't play Rogers, lost in the semis of Cincy. So he's not in the absolute best form that he would like to be in. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to win this tournament, because he's definitely the odds-on favorite to do so. Sam Querrey, could he potentially, you know, bother him in the second round? Maybe. But I, like I said, man, I mean, he's got maybe Wawrinka in the fourth round, which could be interesting. And then he's got Medvedev in the quarters, which will be a very good match. Fed in the semis. So he doesn't have a very cakewalk draw. I think it's a pretty tough draw that he's got. I think Fed has a pretty easy quarter, to be honest. So I'm looking towards a Djokovic-Federer. And then in the bottom half, Parsa, I'm going to be going with actually Felix Auger-Aliassime to make the semifinals, to be opposite of Rafa Nadal. And I think that you're going to have a Nadal-Felix. And then I'm going with Joker-Nadal final, with actually Rafa Nadal winning this tournament. I think he set himself up really good this summer, has had a lot of breaks, won Montreal easily. Only played four matches, and the finals was a cakewalk. So I think physically he's feeling pretty good. We know that it could change in an instant if he's got a really tough five-setter. But with that being said, I think you're going to see a Joker-Nadal final. You actually called it on the Tuesday when you messaged me. You were like, you went down to the Open to check it out. Of course, you're playing slow. What did you say, Parsa, that Wawrinka and Djokovic were practicing, and Wawrinka hit about 120-mile-an-hour serves, and Djokovic nailed them all back right at his feet. So, yeah, that's like, you know, that's telling us that that's not really a Federer surface, pardon me, that's really more conducive to a game, very high elite game style, baseline game style, which Djokovic and Nadal have, and they're still number one and two in the world, and they should be able to, withstanding injury and something crazy happening, make the finals and face off once again to the delight of the New York crowd. So I think that that's what I'm going with, and I'm not looking forward to hearing your analysis. I mean, I just don't think Dominic Thiem and Zverev have what it takes. I'm actually going to be seeing Thiem a little bit later today. There's a Babolat event at Grand Central to release his new Pure Strike. So I'll talk to him a bit, see how he's doing. But he's actually getting over he had the flu, so he's been in bed. Now I think he's out and about practicing once again. But I just don't think he's ready for a deep run here. What's your take on this draw here?
Yeah, I definitely have Djokovic going through. I think that Medvedev the quarterfinal will probably be a five-setter. And then he's got Federer, I think, in the semis there. And I look at Federer, you know, working through the draw again, you know, at 38 years old or whatever he's going to be.
He is 38, though.
38, there you go. He turned 38 already. So, yeah. You know, he's still just better than everyone. And I think, although I think he'll be primed for an upset, you know, like a guy like Goffin or Coric or, you know, these kinds of guys can give him problems. Nishikori possibly in the quarterfinal. There's possibilities that he may not get there, but I think the odds-on favorite would be a Djokovic Federer in the bottom half there. There's quite a bit of compelling stories, you know, hoping things happen. You know, like hoping like a Nick Kyrgios can make it that far. He just won't, unfortunately, just because he doesn't train seriously enough. But, you know, maybe this should be the alarm to him. Maybe he'll get to the fourth round, you know, lose to Tsitsipas into the third round and lose to Tsitsipas because he's a little bit banged up. Or to Bautista Agut, you know, in the round of 16, if he gets through Tsitsipas, whatever it is. And he could look back at the draw and go like, wow, you know, I wouldn't play Nadal to the semis here, you know, and the rest of the guys I can sort of beat at 97% of my game, and I just need two matches to win a slam, you know, and $3 million, you know, why not train a little bit harder and get in shape so that I could be there? But that being said, for me, I think it's going to be Bautista Agut in the upper half here, going to face his compatriot Rafael Nadal in the bottom half. And like I had told you before the draws came out, I think it's going to be a Djokovic-Nadal final. And as I also said last week, I don't think there's any stopping Djokovic. Number 17, Nole is going to be putting on that FDNY NYPD hat again. And a shout-out to a pretty interesting thing. Anna Bielan-Zarska is a colleague of mine at my club, and she's got a phenomenal son. His name is Sebastian. And he's number one right now in the United States for 10, 11-year-olds. Yeah. And he actually just got selected to hand the men's final trophy to the champion. So,
oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing memory that's going to last a lifetime and pretty cool. And so shout out to him and look forward to watching him give the trophy to Novak Djokovic.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
My dark horses, by the way.
Yes, I'm going with Opelka, man. I want to beat you to the punch there in case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, dark horses, like you already mentioned about Rublev, I think is a very strong dark horse.
Yes.
You know, somebody who can really make a deep run and can be pose big problems. At the same time, you know, the guy that I look at that I think can do something and that may be primed, and although he's a seed, Christian Garin, I feel like is someone to watch.
Great call on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a seed. So, our rule is that we don't pick the seeds for the dark horse. So if I had to go with a non-seed dark horse type of guy, who could pose problems, I'd go with someone like Nishioka. I think he's somebody who can put a ton of balls in play and super fast, and you really have to beat him. Although I feel like he'll probably lose to Taylor Fritz in the second round, I think he can pose a lot of problems. So that's what I've got for you. I hope everyone enjoys watching the Open, and it's going to be an exciting 2 weeks for sure.
Sparsa, before just one quick point before we sign off for this week. Nick Kyrgios, back at him one quick second, Parsa. Was the fine that he got in Cincinnati for $113,000? In your opinion, was it justified? A, do you think he should get suspended indefinitely? B, and ultimately, when we look at this from A to B, So this is what I'm going to say. Is this good for tennis? Okay. And if it is or it isn't, I mean, everybody's got their opinion, which is valid, and they're allowed to have that. Does he need to, like, I think he's the type of guy, if he just goes out there and he just engages and he's cool and he doesn't go nuts on the umpire and break his rackets, people are still going to like him. You know what I mean? Just because the way he is. Like, he was in Washington, he was fantastic, right? And then he goes to Montreal, he played okay, he lost first round, and then he goes to Cincy, he wins a round, and then he just went absolutely berserk against Khachanov in that second round match, which he could have actually won if he put his head together. And then he would have won probably the next round and had a probably decent tournament. I think that John McEnroe made a really good point, and that he said that this guy is just so absolutely frightened about giving his best that he does this stuff. Like, he's just so, you know what I mean? He knows he's talented, he knows he's good, but he's just like, it's that fear of failing, and he just doesn't want to fail. So he's like, okay, so I'm just going to tank, I'm going to be a jackass, and then if whatever happens, happens, right? And I don't know. I mean, you know, I love this guy, right? And I've been following him since he was winning Challengers in Sarasota 5 years ago. We were talking about him on the podcast, and now he's become one of the best players in the world, at the very least in terms of talent, not in terms of week-to-week results. I think he's got to, you know, really assess what he's doing, because I don't care what he says about you got to do things your own way, you got to do things my way, you got to do things anyway. You can't be doing stuff like this. You can't spit at the umpire, say you're effing tool and all of this stuff. Like, come on, man. Like, okay, we get it. You're cool. You think you're hard. You think you're all of this stuff, but you got to get your act together, buddy. I'm not saying don't break a racket, man. I'm not saying don't, like, be a little bit confrontational with maybe the umpire. But it's just too much. You're going in the back, breaking rackets, coming out, just continuous dialogue, swearing. It's just, it gets tiring after. You know, people will still watch. You can bet your bottom dollar that his first round match at the US Open is going to be absolutely jammed. There's no question about that. But, this is coming from a Kyrgios fan. You know, I love the guy. But I would just really, and I'm not saying to go completely away from what you're doing, but you got to kind of normalize this, because you could be facing a year suspension, man, if this keeps going, because every dog has his day. You know what I mean? Like, you can only go so much with something before it gets long in the tooth and you're done. So, those are my two cents on Nick Kyrgios. What do you think?
Great analysis. There's got to be lines drawn.
Yes.
And structure had. But I don't think he's going to deviate much from what you see.
Yes.
Maybe he can temper himself as he matures a little bit more, in terms of, you know, hurting other people or directing, you know, insults at specific people. But I think the emotion, the rawness of what he does is what he is.
Yes.
You know, and is it a fear of failure thing? I mean, honestly, Johnny Mac, I mean, come on. I don't know. He's just, like, not the right guy to be talking about that. And
it's
you
like
can
the,
make it science-based.
It's like the kettle call. What is it? The calling thing black?
Yeah,
calling
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same sort of idea. Look, the fact is, I already said the fact. The fact is, the dude needs to train a little bit harder. If he trains a little bit harder with the same exact attitude, yeah, and his body can sustain 7 matches in a 2-week time frame, the guy can be a Grand Slam champion, period. End of story.
Yeah.
So that's with cracking rackets and spitting at umpires and obnoxious behavior and everything.
Yes.
The bottom line is, his body is not prepared for the torture that it takes to win a Grand Slam. And, you know, he can do it for a week at a time, and then yes, he's sort of toast. So I think, does the attitude need to change? Yeah. I mean, does it bother me? I get on the court with some of my kids and they're like, I'm going to go to the Nick Kyrgios, and they laugh about it and they want to slam the racket. You know, they fake slam the racket into the ground and break everything. And so he's definitely got the pop culture attention, and that's a big responsibility. And, he's definitely exciting, and I think he's great for the sport in terms of his flair, his play, his emotions, all of it. But I think the greatest story would be taking all that and becoming a champion.
Amazing. Exactly. Okay. So everybody out there, you've heard what Parsa and I have to say about the 2019 US Open. We will be back next Sunday for our mid-tournament podcast, and then we'll finish it up the week after that, after the men's final. In the meantime, you can follow us at tennisconnected.com. You can follow Parsa at ParsaSammy on Twitter as well as Instagram. You can follow myself on Twitter and Instagram. My personal Instagram is on Mars. And other than that, we'll be at the U.S. Open covering that throughout the fortnight, which is fantastic. Looking forward to it. Parsa, thank you so much once again for joining us today.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes. And everybody out there, thanks for listening. As always, we welcome your feedback whenever you want to give it to us. You can download this podcast on iTunes as well as Android. And lastly, be good. Enjoy all the action from NYC. And we will speak with you in about a week's time.